Jack did ask about that.
Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. It is the, it's time for a meeting, Wednesday, September 1st. I would like to do roll call, so Supervisor Rose?
Here.
Supervisor Frederick?
Here.
Supervisor Gully?
Here.
Youth and Governance, first name?
Sam Arnold.
Okay.
Rhea Bebu.
Okay. Supervisor Wimble?
Here.
Supervisor Belsky?
Here.
And Supervisor Nardigian?
Present.
And at this point, we are due citizens' comments. Is there anybody here that wants to speak tonight? Nobody at all? Very good. Citizens' comments is closed. Supervisor's comments at this time. Anybody would like to speak? Supervisor Belsky?
Yes. And since I wasn't at the last meeting, and in preparation for tonight's meeting, I went thoroughly through the notes, and I decided to call the City of Kenosha Finance Director, Carol Stancato. So I wanted to clarify some of the overtime costs for the city at being estimated at $1 million. So this is the breakdown. 2020, City of Kenosha Police Department for civil unrest spent $531,000 for overtime. With the fringe benefits, including Social Security, pension, it came to $636,000. There was a protest in January, which is on the 2021 books. That January protest was $180,000 overtime, and that's with fringe benefits. They had an additional $500,000 in equipment and damages due to a Bearcat and then their buildings, but that is not part of overtime. Also, President Trump granted Kenosha $1 million for expenses, and that could include overtime. The city was awarded $600,000 and the county $400,000. Executive Cruiser wanted some help with the fencing, and so the city gave $100,000 back to the county to pay for the fencing. So I just want to be clear on what was actually spent on overtime versus equipment damages. I would also request from Director Merrill, how did we spend our $500,000 grant from President Trump? You probably have shared it with the finance, but if you could provide that to us, I would appreciate it. I'd like a breakdown. That's all.
Any other supervisors' comments? Okay, supervisor comments is closed. Chairman comments? I have none. Approval of the minutes for August 4th, 2021.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Number seven is the resolution from the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department, a resolution to approve the 2021 Walmart Foundation Grant Discharge Planner Program.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
My name is Angela Kvass. I'm the Fiscal Services Manager for the Sheriff's Department. I'm here to present this resolution to accept $1,000 worth of grant funds that's being offered to us through the Walmart Foundation. This fund, or this grant, is going to be applied to our DSO, Eddie Hartnell. He is the discharge coordinator. The funds are used to buy supplies for inmates that they may need when they're released. So things like bus tokens, toiletries, a spare set of clothes, that sort of thing.
So move approval.
Second.
Yes.
Just one question. I'm sure it's not a big deal. Just sure. A typo on the first line. Supposed to say $1,000.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if that matters or not. Okay.
You got to point it out in public like that.
I didn't know if it mattered. That's why. Sorry.
My question is: this something that happens every year?
This is the second year we've gotten it. Last year, I believe the amount was $1,200.
Okay.
It's new. Eddie was actually shopping when one of the store associates had mentioned it to him. So they have this, that's an opportunity for them. So last year was the first year that they applied for it.
Okay, thank you.
And this subject to carryover too?
Yes, yes, it is.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
You need governance.
I thought they.
New roll call.
Get them first.
They're all part of the group, yeah. Number eight, Kenosha Sheriff's Department body camera policies for review.
Hi, I'm Sergeant Chase Forster, and I am in charge of the body cam program at the Sheriff's Department. I was asked to come here today giving an update on how the program is going. It's growing really, really well. It's fantastic. Everyone loves the body cameras. We've worked out most of our issues, and everyone seems to be doing a really good job with it. I have some fun factual numbers here. So far, we've used, since the end of April, since our launch, we've used 58 terabytes of data, which are in the cloud. You know, we don't store it in-house. That's about 143,000 pieces of digital evidence, squad video, body cam video, and series of pictures, not thousands of pictures, but each time someone takes 30 pictures, that's one piece of evidence, right? So 143,000 pieces already. We've created over 740 cases. That means that we're grabbing a bunch of this evidence, putting it into a case, and we send it out to either the DA's office or open records request or anyone else that requests it. So we've created about 740 cases, that most of them have been created by me. I've created over 500 of them and sent them mostly over to the DA's office for their factual findings. We have about 240 body cams issued right now, roughly. You know, they come and go as people leave and get hired, but roughly about 240. And we just got our ALPRs, our automatic license plate readers, in 15 squads. Like last month, I think we got them in. And that's been going fantastic. Every deputy that has an assigned squad with one of the ALPR readers on it, they love it, absolutely love it. As you drive around, it just captures plates as you're driving around full speed. You know, you can go on interstate speeds, you can sit there on the side of the interstate, and it's just pinging cars as they're driving by. It works that well. So as they're going through shopping centers or, you know, side streets, as they're just driving through at normal speeds, they don't even have to do anything. It's just capturing plates the whole time. So that's going awesome. You know, it captures stolen plates, suspended plates, expired plates, any kind of registration violation you can think of. Other than that, that's kind of what I have. Do you have any questions for me? Yes.
On that ACR, is that what that's called?
The ALPR, Automated License Plate.
You talk about just the regular, like, automotive or automobile type policy. What about things like warrants that somebody might have that would be in it? Does it do anything like that?
No, it only flags the plate. So if there's a person that's associated with the plate, it doesn't run out the plate.
Okay.
So basically what I have to do is I have to go on the DOT website, and I have to download, they have what's called their hot list of every known plate for Wisconsin, mm-hmm. or every known plate that's put into the system. So we do have some Illinois or Minnesota plates or whatnot, but mostly Wisconsin plates. So I have to download this list that gets uploaded into our system, and these plate readers don't actually run anything out. They just check what's on the
list.
See
what's in that list.
Yeah, and none of it has names on it. It's just the plate data.
Okay. Yeah. And is there a time or other benefit to the officer or the deputy in doing this? Is this something that has reduced the amount of time to be able to find them? I mean, obviously, if it's automated.
Yeah, I don't know how to look up that data, but they don't have to focus on driving and using the computer at the same time. They have a tablet in the car that, as they're driving along, it's, like I said, it's flagging each plate it sees, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't pick and choose. Each thing that's in front of it, it's flagging it. So the second it has a violation, it pops up on their little tablet, and all they have to do is glance over to see what the violation is. And then they can either pick up their mic on the, you know, and talk to dispatch and run it over to dispatch, and then they can pull the car over.
Okay.
So it's more of a convenience, right? But, and another benefit too, if they have like a lot of cars leaving an area or something like that they can just flag all those for future investigations too, mm-hmm. instead of trying to write them all down as they're passing them. So
right.
It is definitely a big convenience tool.
Good. Okay. No, I thought there'd be a benefit. I just didn't know what the sure. specific benefit would be. Thank you.
Hi. I have a question on how the tracking and maintenance and supervision of ensuring cameras are on when they're supposed to be on. How is that being managed and how is it going?
So it's built into our policy that when they're on duty, that their camera has to be, there's an on duty and off duty button, it has to be on
I understand duty. That part. Right. I'm asking about the management of it to ensure that policy is being followed.
So I'm the person who gathers all the data, right? And if I see an issue, like if I'm missing footage, right, I will reach out to find out, you know, why is this footage missing? And they're required to state it in the report why it's missing. So if like their camera's dead or...
Is their supervisor notified as well? I mean, do they get an alert?
Sometimes, you know, it could be on the call and then all of a sudden they'll get a vibrate and then it'll just die if the battery's dead. You know, so then they're required to put it in a report that their camera's dead. But otherwise, really the only way that I would know is if going back and looking for their footage and it's missing, right? We could run a report to see like every hour what the batteries are at, but yeah, we don't typically do that. We just, you know, we're expecting them to follow the policy.
I wanted to follow up because in a previous meeting, we had talked about the management of that specific policy, because if we're going to have the policy, we've got to ensure that the management is there as well.
Sure, I understand.
Yes. And regarding what she was just talking about, also like a potential plan of action for sheriffs who violate body camera policies at the previous meeting, there wasn't really a concrete one in place. So I was wondering kind of if that has been done or what the plan of action is for sheriffs who violate body camera policies.
I haven't had that issue yet, but we would just follow our normal standard procedure of discipline.
Anybody else?
Any other questions for me? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Number 9 on the agenda, discussion regarding Kenosha Sheriff's Department staffing challenges.
Good evening, committee members. There were two directives given to staff at the last meeting. The first was to authorize and direct staff to come forward with a cost estimate for retroactive payments as well as forthcoming budget, and that was regarding Supervisor Rose's resolution on paying time and a half to exempt supervisory staff in the Sheriff's Department. We put together estimates, and please keep in mind these are estimates. It's not a person-by-person estimate. Hours were gathered by the Sheriff's Department, and we used an average overtime rate for command staff to calculate a dollar amount and then built-in roll-ups. And we came up with an amount of $200,000. Now, that encompasses August 1st of last year through now, through present. Basically, I would say, on average, through the date of the last meeting, because the estimates were put together based on that historical information. And again, if we were to use this to do an accurate payout of person by person, I would say that would not be accurate. We cannot divide this up by person because we have no records. So we were asked to come back with an estimate. That is the estimate that I have for you.
Does the department have some sort of estimate on hourly? I thought the staff was asked to at least take a look at how many hours they had produced overtime in 2020. What is that figure? I know this for a fact that they were asked to do that, so I've talked to staff. So what is that?
I'm sorry, I'm not following you.
What I'd like to know is from the Sheriff's Department supervisory staff for each one, from August 1 to the end of the year, what was the number of hours for each person?
The average that I was given was for the period of civil unrest, it was 73 and a half hours average per person. And for the remainder of the year, it was I believe, 29 hours. The total estimated hours. Okay, if I'm reading this right, this wasn't exactly the format that it was given to me in.
So it looks like about 100 hours per person, right?
Yeah.
And that's how you came to the 200,000, is you just multiplied
by an average overtime rate, and then with roll-offs being Social Security and WRS.
Good. So clarification, I'm sorry. So 73.5 would be for some duration during civil unrest.
Correct.
And then from the end of that period until last judiciary meeting.
Yep. On average for the rest of the year, yes.
Aggregate, I mean, so each person only worked 29 hours overtime for that.
That is the.
Whatever that length of.
Yes.
So from beginning of September last year-ish, middle September until July.
Yeah.
And that's just for supervisory?
Yes.
And
deputies that's, are paid overtime.
Right, right. So and that's the number. The number of supervisory staff again is 20.
28.
28. Okay. Thank you.
If I could address the committee for a second through the chair. We were asked specifically last month to speak to the resolution that was brought forward, whether ARPA funds could be used for that purpose, whether we could draw the funds from the general fund. Mm-hmm. And I answered that in that context. My question to the committee is, what would be the goal you're trying to accomplish? If your goal is to get additional compensation into the pockets of the command staff that worked and got some extra compensation, but not as much as you feel is necessary, then perhaps that would be the direction that might be given. And we could come up with a manner in which ARPA funds might be able to be used for something like that. Mm-hmm. Specifically, ARPA funds can't go backwards. They had to start March 3rd and go forward. So the hour for hour calculation going back to the 1st of August, as I explained, doesn't work well for that purpose. We can't use it for that purpose. But if you're looking at a certain dollar amount, a blanket, each supervisor gets X. We can't recap the supervisor worked more than this supervisor because we don't have records. But if you have a dollar amount or you defer to us to come up with a dollar amount and bring it forward, there is the potential of formatting that in a way that we could use ARPA funds. And we can incorporate that into the plan that is being put together.
Mm-hmm.
Through the chair,
Patty, I did some checking with regard to the ARPA funds, and so I'm glad to hear you acknowledge to say they can be used.
Yes.
We don't have to identify, because civil unrest wouldn't be covered prior to March 3rd, but we could say as a committee that we want to use ARPA funds, X amount of funds, to supplement. We don't need to give a date or we can just do a resolution saying this is the amount we want to give these 28 supervisor staff, period, from ARPA. So, you know, because I looked at the formula, talked to some people so I understand that piece. And I think if it's a one time, and I think the next step perhaps then is to look at corrections, to look at supervisory staff, and to say going forward, what's the appropriate pay scale that should be in place. But I think using ARPA funds as a one-time form whomever deserves that acknowledgement and respect for the job that they do and the financial wherewithal to stay with us so that we demonstrate a commitment to them as well financially, I think that's what we should do.
Oh.
You're looking.
I just want to add.
Hang on just a second.
Dr. Rose.
Me, right?
Yes.
Okay. To answer your initial question before you started really getting into it, you wanted to know what direction we wanted. Well, I put out that request for the hours specifically not to. It was more of a specific comment so I knew what the number was, because we were in this unknown area. So now you came back with the number of 200,000. That doesn't help me tell you what I would like to see done. I now know the number, right?
Okay.
That's the purpose of why I made that request.
Okay.
So now we know. I didn't know. It was, nobody knew.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing all the work, and whoever else in the room did the work.
I would.
Yeah, I mean, thank you.
Did the lion's share of the work.
Because we didn't know. Now we know at least an approximate number, so then we can move forward from there. That was my line of thinking, so I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Did you subtract off that $200,000, that which was paid?
Yes.
So this is a net amount?
Correct.
Taking into account?
Yes.
You said what some people, it was $1,000 a person?
Some was $1,000, some was $2,000. The total what paid out was $41,000.
41?
Yes.
So that was subtracted off the gross?
Yes. Yes. Supervisor Gully?
I'm sorry I'm hung up on this, but so I believe in Supervisor Rose's resolution, it referenced the fact that lack of payment for these overtime hours was a deterrent for people seeking supervisor roles.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like this is 3 hours a month.
I'm asking,
is that, does my interpretation of the numbers sound accurate?
I would defer to Chief Deputy or the HR.
Question again, Supervisor.
Part of Supervisor Rose's resolution was that the fact that supervisors have to, that supervisory staff have to work overtime hours and don't get compensated, was stated as being a deterrent for people seeking, like it was hard to fill those roles. And I'm just asking, if that number is correct, then it looks like the average is about 3 hours unpaid overtime per month per person. Again, that could vary, but I'm just asking if that, am I interpreting that correctly?
You would be interpreting that correctly. Again, as Ms. Murrell said, that was an average. Some people are able to report hours that they did recall working, or they had information supporting hours that they did work. Other folks said, I worked a lot, but I couldn't remember those dates and times.
Certainly, but it feels as if, rightfully so, the anomaly was the civil unrest.
Yes, sir.
Like that was the excessive, and if we want to perhaps address that, we can separate that out from this idea that, and I think I've said I want the staff to be compensated,
yes, sir,
appropriately, but if it, I mean, I left the last meeting thinking it was tens of hours, mm-hmm, a month per person. So I just wanted to make sure I was understanding that correctly.
So I have two questions. So we're talking about supervisory staff within the Sheriff's Department. And then we have supervisory staff in general that are employed by Kenosha County who've probably put in a gazillion overtime hours during the pandemic.
That information is not tracked, and no, we did not.
And so what I'm thinking is, like, if I was an employee, I would be saying, well, why are only the Sheriff's Department's getting additional funding, and why the rest of us who are also executive employees aren't? So I'm just wondering, is there a conflict on a county level that it's not being potentially fairly distributed? Or is there a conflict on a federal level, like, fair labor standards or something?
I don't know that I can speak to either of those. Director Tappa, perhaps you
can?
Yes,
please.
Sure. Yes, we have exempt employees throughout the county, and any given day or week, an exempt employee may work many more hours over what a standard business day would be. So there certainly is an element of, okay, do you single one group of people out and say you get overtime and the other people don't? However, there, you have this group of people that we're talking about, the law enforcement command staff that worked during civil unrest and a very specific emergency high-risk situation where it was a number of hours. I mean, we recognize that as I said before, their efforts and their time and their accomplishments do not go unnoticed and or unappreciated. But you are correct. The health department staff, the exempt members of the health department staff, have worked incredible number of hours throughout this pandemic. Certainly when it first, got significant. But they continue to work a number of hours. Along with that, folks throughout the county, my staff, which is primarily exempt, have been there to support all of these departments and have worked a number of additional hours above and beyond. So you are correct in that. In terms of the Fair Labor Standards Act and treating one group of exempt employees differently than another, we'd have to, you know, be sure that we have the appropriate legal understanding of how we're classifying a certain group of employees versus a different one, if there's enough difference there to not put everyone's exempt status at risk. There are a lot of factors involved in exempt status and working fine.
Richard, do you have anything to add?
No, other than to say that, I mean, certainly I think when we had it's hard to answer a question like that in the abstract. I think when we had an actual proposal, that'd be something that we'd want to have carefully vetted, probably by outside counsel who specializes in the FLSA. Certainly, you know, we are generalists. You know, I can speak in general terms, but I would probably want someone who deals with it regularly to make sure that we weren't in any way, shape, or form putting the county at risk.
Yes. I'll just add what I believe we can do is consider some type of additional pay when they work in some, you know, different capacity. We've talked about this before. A good example of that is when our command staff work the Country Thunder or the Amazon, you know, additional work that they use the county for, where that's an additional stipend. It's above and beyond because it is above and beyond work. Outlining something like that, you know, is potentially possible.
Supervisor Bilski.
So I have two questions. ARPA funds were given, and as were the grants from President Trump, because of exceptional circumstances. And I think if we were to look at exempt employees across the board that gave for COVID, for civil unrest, doesn't have to be defined at that, but I think it would be a good faith effort. It's a one time, because this is an exceptional circumstance, to use ARPA funds for that, so that we retain our employees, our valued employees. So that's number one. Number two, the command staff, the 28 supervisory staff that's exempt, is the known practice that has been mentioned in the past, is that still in place, and was that in place during the civil unrest, where they were taking time? They would switch a day or take time off, the known practice that you refer to. Clara?
Swapping of time, if you will. So I'm sorry, what is your question?
Was that going on during civil unrest, and is that still a known practice among the command staff?
The swapping of time and special time and special day trades that were done during civil unrest were found that it was not a practice known to the Sheriff's Department or accepted by the Sheriff's Department. That practice was corrected and does not continue today. The practice that is continued today is the B2 clause that's included in the Deputy Sheriff's Association that the Sheriff's Department supervisors are allowed to be part of. Other than that, any type of day trades, trading, time on, time off goes through me and my approval.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Again, I would like to say exceptional circumstances require exceptional action by this committee and our full board. And if we want to retain excellent county staff, I think we need to look at compensating them appropriately in the form of a one-time bonus. That is money well spent.
All right. Now, over the years, the county board has been told many times that people don't apply for supervisory staff in the sheriff's department because they don't get overtime and they would make more money as ordinary deputies. I think it's important for us to set some general principles here, and I think that's what the resolution is trying to do. Now, I don't want to get too complicated, because if we consider too many factors here, we get nowhere and we pass nothing because it becomes so complicated that we just keep talking and talking here. So I did draft this resolution. I don't know if you brought the resolution this evening, but if you want to make copies of mine, we can do that too.
The original resolution?
But this was the original resolution, and while we were talking, I just did some revisions here. And instead of going back to August 1st, we merely begin this January 1 with the principle that we will pay overtime. Whether or not that overtime comes to 3 hours a month or some other figure, I don't really think is relevant. But we have been told many times that one of the reasons that people don't apply for supervisory jobs is because of lack of overtime. I'm accepting that as a given and not challenging it. Whether that be 3 hours or 20 hours overtime, I don't think is the principle. We could take this resolution and delete the August 1st from it. I can just share with you what I've drafted here. I struck paragraph number 2 on page 2. Commence this January 1, 2022, that supervisory staff and sheriff's department be paid overtime, and at least for 2022, which I think is clear based upon what I'm hearing this evening, that we pay it out of the American Rescue Plan funds. What we want to do thereafter, we don't have to decide. But at least for the year 2022, we would use it for that purpose. So if you want to take a look at the specific resolution, do you have it, or do you want to have this copy? Maybe that would be the easiest. I have some notes on it. It doesn't matter if you read it or not. Somebody could copy there.
Okay, hold on. Supervisor Wendell.
Well, I'm going to defer to Supervisor Belsky, because we're on the topic. I was going to go back to something she said.
Okay.
So let's continue with this discussion and come back.
All right.
So I'll cede the floor.
Wouldn't we want a resolution that actually has HR look at making it a non-exempt supervisory staff versus exempt? Because I think we do get into legal trouble with the exact staff.
Yeah, I think that's something they work out. I think we're setting out a general policy or principle. How to do it, the mechanics of it, I think we leave that up to the staff. I don't think.
But I think we need to put that in the resolution, is my point. That not just to say to compensate them over time, it's important to say to look at the command staff and evaluate the change in status from exempt to non-exempt, because then it legally addresses the job code, because I think that's a huge factor. Yeah, if we were to add that, is that, would that be appropriate, counsel?
To overtime for command staff.
Well,
I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
Yeah.
It would be appropriate to add what's being reviewed, doing the non-exempt status rather than exempt status in order to facilitate paying overtime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can't pay overtime for exempt. You can give a one-time bonus to somebody through ARPA, but going forward, do we want the command staff, and this is where we would need input from yourself and the sheriff, to say, how are other counties doing it? Should this be a non-exempt position? Because let's face it, law enforcement, how many people really are wanting to get into law enforcement in this day and age? I think we've got to remain competitive, and I think it's something to look at. So while I agree with the resolution, I think we have to safeguard ourselves to say we need to look at the job classification so we're not breaking any laws.
The resolution wasn't on the, we can discuss what's
correct
in the resolution, but and vote on it or anything with it tonight. Just
correct
want everyone to be clear on that, because we were discussing it. I just wanted to go.
I have a question for the committee, if you don't mind. Is the intent, Supervisor Rose's resolution is very specific to hour-for-hour overtime. But my question to the committee is that what you would want to see going forward? Or would you be looking at some kind of a policy that states that in exceptional circumstances, and I know I'm using the wrong words, but obviously civil unrest is the thing that brought this to mind, to say, oh my gosh, we have no mechanism in place to get
and
overtime
COVID, and COVID. Yeah.
COVID is another. That is true, but what the resolution is talking about is overtime going forward. So I'm going to back away from ARPA funds. ARPA funds for the purpose of a one-time bonus works. ARPA funds to fund this type of an initiative ends at the end of 2024. So then it's on the levy. So what is the best manner in which to put something in place? Are you looking for hour for hour overtime that the supervisor spends an extra hour at his desk filling out a report and that's overtime? Or in circumstances where they get called out on special duty that's above and beyond their normal realm of duty, situations of civil unrest. I mean, obviously that doesn't happen often, but things that are over and above their normal job. Would that be the type of circumstance, and can the pay then be constructed in a manner that an exempt employee would get it? And the reason that I bring this up, and I know Clara's gonna yell at me, but if we reclassify those supervisors as non-exempt staff, there are things that they lose. There are benefits exempt staff get in different areas that are little things, but they're just something special. Perhaps there's no waiting period on their A&S pay. They get it from day one. Well, you make them non-exempt and they don't get that anymore. So is that in their best interest to make them non-exempt? I don't know that.
So those are really important things, and that's why I think really vetting this out, what are we really looking for to do, and in what way? And I just, where is the mechanism where we could really go far deeper than this committee, because we're really looking at all exempt employees of Kenosha County and not just the Sheriff's Department. So how do we do that if that's what this group is interested in moving forward with? Yes.
I personally would like to see a one-time bonus given the exceptional circumstance of this past year, number one. Number two, I think we leave it up to the deputy and to the sheriff to say, and perhaps talking with the union or association on what is the best move forward. What would be the recommendation to come back to this committee to say we keep it exempt or we go non-exempt? I don't think that's something that we incorporate into any resolution at this time. I think we do a one-time bonus payout, and then we do an evaluation of our jobs to make sure corrections, the sheriff, supervisory staff, the administrative staff, they're all being paid the appropriate rate so that we remain competitive. That's not a resolution for today, in my view.
I think, again, I don't think we should get too complicated, because when you put a lot of discretion in the administration to pick and choose what constitutes the time that you get overtime or bonus, makes for rules which are unevenly applied, and I think it's the wrong way to go. And there can be abuses can be developed that just paying overtime for supervisory staff is simple and direct. Sheriff, chief deputy can define what constitutes overtime. Sitting at your desk doing nothing between 5 and 6 is not overtime. That's something that the sheriff can, as this top person there, can regulate. They know what overtime is. We've been told countless times that people don't want to apply for supervisory jobs because they don't get overtime. It's very simple. It addresses that issue. I don't like this bonus idea. If we want to go broader than that, consider supervisory staff in general. That's certainly something that the county board can consider. There are a lot of committees that can take that up. This deals with the department that's under the jurisdiction of this committee, and that's why I've drafted it in the form that I have drafted it. And it's something we've talked about countless times, so now we're addressing it. You either do or you don't.
Okay. Going back to Supervisor Zabelski, when you say the one-time bonus, I just want to be crystal clear. Are you talking about the Sheriff's Department supervisors or all?
Everybody.
Okay, I wanted to make sure of that. Okay.
Everybody that
okay,
put
I just want to be clear.
Everybody that put in the time, whether it was COVID or civil unrest, and they're in exempt status, or okay, or even non-exempt. I mean, you have to, as the HR, Clara, you have to make the determination of which departments put in all the extra time. They could be exempt or non-exempt. I think ARPA money should be used for this exceptional circumstance. That's my view. That's what I would be looking to get out of this.
Okay, and then I'm going to try to your point about deputies not putting in for supervision because they don't get overtime. I don't really think that, and anybody correct me, that it has to do with the exempt status, because a supervisor typically gets very little overtime. What happens is a deputy, similar to a police officer, might get called in for an entire shift many times in a month. So their numbers go very high. I know people on the city police department that their salary may be in the range of a captain because of all the overtime, where a sergeant wouldn't have that luxury no matter what. I shouldn't say luxury, it's probably the wrong word for working overtime, right? But does that make sense? It just hit me as we were talking about it, that I don't think it has to do with, say, these numbers here, that 29 for the remainder of the year. I think it has to do with the call-in of complete shifts, or, you know, dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of hours that a deputy may work, as opposed to what a supervisor would work anyway. So to get the overtime, which may be the way to go, I don't know, it would only be a few hours a month.
Mm-hmm. So if I may, so a better way to say it is it's lost revenue, right? It's not the overtime hours, it's the...
Okay, why they wouldn't put in for it? This is my opinion only.
Right, but it's lost revenue because they don't have the opportunity to earn that.
They don't have the opportunity to get the overtime.
It's not that they're working...
Right.
Okay, so then
in a general sense, right?
Then it goes back to the pay structure review.
Correct.
Okay, then
I would say, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Yes.
And to the point of Supervisor Ramble, Supervisor Gully, in the private sector and private business, there are some people just don't want to be supervisors because there's these workaholics and they want to get paid for every hour they're there. And then there are people who want to be supervisors because they see the benefit of growth and getting into areas that they couldn't get into if they stayed down at a hourly wage, if you will, as opposed to an exempt, or non-exempt or exempt. I believe we need to look at the structure of our pay. I don't think we can pay bonuses to an exempt without calling them non-exempt. Not bonuses, overtime. That's strictly forbidden. And to get to something to attract supervisors, I don't know if we're going to attract those who don't want to be supervisors or in command in our system, but we might be able to attract them who want to be from other systems. And that benefits us because we bring in other people from other areas that do things in other ways. Private business, we want to do that. We want to bring in that outside influence and determine, let the command determine whether that's something good or something bad, and we need to, you know, shuttle it out or, you know, feather it in. So I don't think, my personal opinion and how I've seen people work towards supervisory or exempt or non-exempt, the ones who are just, I'm in for the hourly wage because I am going to work my butt off and I'm going to make as much as I can make, or, hey, I want growth in an area that I can't get to at a non-exempt. I got to go exempt. Word it that way. I think there's two clearly different ways.
I'll make one other comment. My husband is a retired firefighter. He had every opportunity working on the job for 30 years to go into administration. Why didn't he? Because Wisconsin has one of the best retirement systems in the nation. And so he made it up to lieutenant. He got his overtime and he worked a lot of hours and he's got a very good pension. And I think that's why a lot of people, in my opinion, don't go into supervisory. Because again, Wisconsin has one of the best retirement systems in the nation. So that's all I'll say on that.
It's fully funded.
Yeah.
Yes. Can I just ask one more question? So just point of clarification on your suggestion, it would look something like perhaps a one-time bonus, potentially county staff-wide.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If I could comment on that. In May, the board adopted a resolution directing administration to come up with a plan for ARPA. We are working on that plan.
I have asked people to give me ideas, things they want to see. I've received several phone calls. I've made a note of exactly what you said,
mm-hmm.
and we will incorporate something into the plan.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Patty?
Yes.
Okay. The second directive that was given was to authorize and direct to bring back to the next meeting information on how Racine accomplished the payment to correctional guards with American Rescue Plan monies. I don't know if you feel you've received an answer to that. Obviously, the statements I made on ARPA had to do specifically with Supervisor Rose's resolution. I have spoken with the Racine County Finance Director. I've also spoken with their HR Director, and I have a copy of their resolution. I know exactly how they're putting those funds in place. They are using ARPA funds, which everything that we've read, in fact, that was my comment back to him. You know, all these things are saying this is one-time money. Don't use it for operations. Use it for one-time things. And his response was, we understand that, but we have a severe issue here. Racine was facing 112% turnover in their correctional staff and about a 50% vacancy. To them, in my view, the ARPA money was a lifeline. We were not sitting in that same position. We had a 14% vacancy rate. Our turnover rate wasn't 112%. Where they felt they had to take this money and move forward immediately, we did not have that same sense of urgency. We do now have a larger sense of concern based on the actions that Racine County took. The way that they are working this in is they put this into effect on August 14th. That's when the resolution was effective. Those pay raises went into effect then. They are funding it in 2021 with ARPA funds. Then over the next couple years, they will decrease the amount of ARPA funds they use to fund it, so that by the time the ARPA funds run out, it is completely on the levy. So they will cushion the levy impact over the next few years. I didn't ask for detailed information. I needed the concept, and he gave me that concept. I understood what they were doing. I wanted to make sure they weren't gonna fall off a cliff at the end of 4 years. Not that that was my problem, but, and they were well aware of that. But it seemed to be that in that section of the meeting last month, which I was not present for because I thought it was a discussion about staffing in corrections. I didn't think it was going to have anything to do with pay or ARPA funding for that. So I wanted to make sure that the directive was this. I wanted to come back with additional pay and corrections can be funded with ARPA. It has to be structured properly. Would we factor that in possibly as a, like they are doing, as a stopgap? That is a possibility. We are looking at that in relation to the plan we're putting together.
Oh, you mentioned 112% turnover in Racine. What is it in Kenosha?
I do not have that number. Do we?
I don't have that.
Okay. Supervisor
Gully? I mean, I was just going to say, I think if you want a formal request to make sure that that's listed in the items.
I have it on my list.
Because I like,
right.
The problem with, you know, I don't want the philosophy to be that the people that have been here giving their hours for years don't see the benefit of something. So it has to be, and formally request that that be part of the proposal.
Yep, I have that on my list.
So I know we have no authority to do anything in other departments, but is that part of the list to consider other exempt employees that are Kenosha County employees?
As
everyone.
As Supervisor Belsky was stating with the exempt and bonuses for, yes, that is a countywide look at the impact of COVID, the extra hours that were put in. Just the, I mean, you know that we had the vaccine clinics, and quite frankly, that was an all hands on deck. And you had people from every department working those vaccine clinics,
mm-hmm.
and the exempt people were not getting paid extra.
Mm-hmm.
And either they worked on a weekday and they ended up doing the real work on the weekend, or they worked on the weekend at the vaccine clinic. But mm-hmm. it was part of a bigger purpose. It was to help the community. So no one was looking for anything special, but that was one example of everyone stepping up. And the hourly people got paid overtime if they worked the additional hours. The exempt staff did not.
So then my next question would be, If there was a desire to begin the process of seeing whether your exempt employees wanted to be non-exempt, and other county employees who are exempt want to be non-exempt, that's not something that goes on in this committee, but where does that land from here? Because that's kind of what we're talking about. Maybe that's the next conversation that has to be had, but it isn't something
that wasn't
when we took this. No, what I had said is that if the chief deputy and sheriff need to reassess with the association on whether those positions should be exempt or non-exempt, not for the rest of the county, like the health department or anything like that. It was just specific to the sheriff's department. Was my intent for the looking at the exempt versus non-exempt, but the bonuses were for countywide.
But if you have one department that decides it's going to go everybody's hourly, isn't that where the federal potential, like,
that would be another
no.
question for you?
It's they yeah. have to work with the association.
No, hang on a second. No, I'm not talking about the association.
The command staff are not members of the
That's
association.
That's true.
To categorize an employee as exempt, they need to meet the criteria under the law, the federal and state law. So it's not, you know, it's not a choice whether you treat someone as exempt. You can't treat an employee that doesn't qualify as exempt.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose to treat what would otherwise be exempt employees as not exempt, you can choose to do that, but then they're not exempt.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope no one's suggesting that it's an employee choice.
No. No, you do the evaluation. Right.
And there are a number of things that would factor into that. If we were to treat those employees as non-exempt, even though they would qualify as exempt.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about all employees of
Michigan.
Just a sheriff.
Hang on a second. Right? Because if you're treating one class different than another, shouldn't that be something that would be available to everybody?
Not necessarily, because it's a very specific determination based on different job requirements and other factors going to individual.
Because my thought is like if I was a health department employee and I was putting in 80 hours a week for a year, and I found out that there's another group of employees that are now getting paid hourly, but I'm still doing 80 hours a week and getting paid my salary. I was wondering, is there some sort of, is there a conflict with that?
Well, there's certainly a cultural conflict in that. It's a difficult thing. But it does exist. For example, I believe at the police department, they choose to treat them as not exempt, but there are other exempt employees who work in the city. And how they sort that out and deal with that culturally, I don't know specifically. But it's a more of a cultural issue in
I mean, I guess it would be something to consider at some point if there was a change on the sheriff's department level, that maybe it gets considered, you know, across all of the kind of county employees, just in the matter of fairness. And I don't know, and I'm not an expert on it, but it feels like it's something that could be addressed at some time if that was coming. Yes.
Chair, I'd ask that at the next meeting we calendar the resolution, and I will revise this, and we vote it up or down, either for it or against it, and move on.
Would you include the bonuses then, the one-time bonus in there?
I wasn't going to do that.
Okay.
I was just going to
because that's going to be...
That'll be on.
He's going to update it the way he wants to
update
it.
And you can vote it up or down. Yeah. Bring it to a head, one way or the other.
Okay.
And put your calendar as a resolution, so it can be voted.
Okay.
Else on this topic? As far as any other business, I just have one thing. Our next meeting, our next meeting actually lands on the Wednesday for the budget oversight meeting. So we want to potentially, if it's okay with everybody, move this meeting to October 12th, Tuesday, instead of October 13th.
I am not available, just so you know, that day.
The 12th is human.
I thought we were on the 6th. Are we on the 6th?
I was told October 12th and 13th is what I was told.
Yeah, but our next meeting was scheduled for the 6th of October. I thought the budget was coming out on the 5th.
Yeah.
So is there a reason why we can't meet on the 6th?
This committee has moved their meeting because
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Typically, this committee has moved their meeting because the day after the budget presentation doesn't give you time to review the budget.
To start reviewing the budget. Got it. Okay.
To go through it. So it has typically been moved a week out.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to look at human services. That's always the conflict.
I must say it's on the
It does conflict.
Yeah.
I was told it does not conflict.
Okay.
Yeah.
What date?
So Tuesday, October 12th instead of the 13th.
6:30?
Yes.
I will not be here. Just noting that now.
Okay.
Is there some other date that he can be here?
There are so many meetings going on.
Right.
I was given that date and time as one that would be open and there'd be no other meetings that would be conflicting with it. Do you really want me to look for another date?
That's on you. I'm fine with you just keeping that date. I have to work. I can't avoid that.
Colin's sick.
All right.
Yeah.
There's no public record of
that. Yeah, no, right.
I didn't say that.
Any other business law by law? This time? Other business?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yep.
So that's
both of you down there? Yep.
Here.
Awesome.
I'd like to do
eating adjourned. You thank you very much.
Good job through it. Okay.
Yeah. Trying my best.
What happens with the 15th?